Here's what's coming up in the Category5.tv newsroom. Mycroft AI's Linux voice assistant has attracted a lawsuit, and the creators decided to fight the patent troll tooth and nail. A U.S.-based natural gas facility shut down operations for 2 days after being hit by ransomware. Jeff Bezos, the richest man in the world, has pledged $10 billion to fight climate change. And Ring doorbell maker makes two-factor verification mandatory. Stick around. The full details are coming up later in the show.
This is the Category5.tv newsroom, covering the week's top tech stories with a slight Linux bias.
I'm Sasha Rickman, joined this week by Jeff Weston and Robbie Ferguson.
Well, some quick honorable mentions this week. Dell Technologies is selling its InfoSec business, RSA, for $2.075 billion as it tries to reduce its long-standing debt. RSA helps companies confirm user IDs and manage other security risks. It serves 30,000 customers, ranging from banks to consumer goods makers. It also runs security conferences, including one scheduled for this month in San Francisco that IBM, incidentally, dropped out of recently. The sale, which was rubber-stamped on Tuesday, was made to a consortium led by STG Partners, a private equity investor that specializes in tech, Ontario Teachers Pension Plan Board, and Dutch private equity group. It's called Alfinvest Partners. Alfinvest Partners, or Alpinvest?
Something like that.
We'll say Alpinevest.
All right, that works.
Yeah. Microsoft released a buggy security update for Windows 10 last week.
Surprise.
Now, some Windows users report that all of the files on their desktop have been deleted. Don't worry, it hasn't actually been deleted. Thankfully, those files are still there. The update just moved them to another user account's folder. That's better than the last time when Microsoft actually deleted people's files back in the October 2018 update. While files appear to the user to be deleted and settings such as the start menu and desktop customization appear to be reset to default, what's actually happening is that Windows 10 is signing people into a temporary user profile to be used during the update process. But for some people, it's failing to restore the user's proper profile when the update is complete.
Odd.
The buggy update is KB4532693.
Wow.
I have the utmost respect for you, Sasha, having to read those very tiny numbers. Microsoft released this update for Windows 10 on February 11th of 2020. Windows Update will automatically install it on your PC. If the system has already installed the update and you haven't experienced the bug, you don't need to take any action. However, if you've encountered the bug, there's one simple way to fix it and get your files back. Uninstall the update that caused the problem. I will not repeat the update KBID. You can rewind. Okay. Since Microsoft will likely re-release the update in the future when the problem is solved, removal is the quickest and easiest fix. Now, looking at the update itself, it says it is to improve security when using Internet Explorer and Microsoft Edge. So, we suggest you stop using those browsers.
Yep.
Problem solved.
Thank you. Let's get into the top stories we're following this week. Startup Mycroft AI stood up to a patent troll who filed a lawsuit against it for building an open source Linux-based voice-controlled assistant. Mycroft AI develops voice assistant software that runs on Linux systems, including the Raspberry Pi. The device can then respond to spoken requests, similar to Amazon Echo or Google Home, such as setting alarms and reminders, searching the web, and so on. Mycroft AI at first learned trouble was brewing when it was contacted in December by a lawyer at a Texas law firm focused on intellectual property. In an email to the startup CEO, Joshua Montgomery, the lawyer claimed Mycroft AI's technology infringed two U.S. patents belonging to their client, VoiceTech Corp. These patents described a system for handling, quote, voice commands from a mobile device to remotely access and control a computer, end quote. Initially, the lawyer offered Mycroft AI a non-exclusive license of VoiceTech's patents. However, after Montgomery ignored the emails, VoiceTech sued Mycroft AI for patent infringement. Earlier this month, Montgomery declared he's ready to fight the lawsuit all the way. He told the Register, quote, "This is a textbook case of why the U.S. patent system is fundamentally broken. Software is math running on a microchip. Sure, it's written in a particular language, and that is copyrightable, but math is not patentable," end quote. According to their abstract, the patents involve, quote, "receiving audio data from a mobile device at the computer. The audio data is decoded into a command. A software program that the command was provided for is determined. At least one process is executed at the computer in response to the command. Output data is generated at the computer in response to executing at least one process at the computer. The output data is transmitted to the mobile device," end quote. Montgomery argued the patents do not reflect the complexity and architecture of modern assistants and pointed out Mycroft AI doesn't even involve a separate mobile device. Because Mycroft AI is based in Missouri, they'd have to spend money hiring a law firm in Texas to work with its attorney. Montgomery described VoiceTech, in his opinion, as a, quote, "patent troll," end quote, and compared such organizations to playground bullies. He said, "If you don't stand up the first time, you'll get picked on forever," end quote. On February 11th, VoiceTech voluntarily dismissed the case. In an update posted to Mycroft blog, Montgomery says, quote, "We have won the battle, not the war." He also noted the outpouring of support from the open source community, saying, "Over the last week, we have been humbled by the outpouring of support. Thousands of you shared the post, sent in further evidence of the invalidity of the patent claims, offered your expert testimony, and even wanted to contribute financially to the legal defense. From everyone at Mycroft, thank you all," end quote.
I love that the open source community comes together.
Yes.
Like that,
yes.
And says, you know what? We're going to back you up. We're going to help you with this.
I think that in all of this is the big win statement.
Sure.
Yeah. Because it shows you that it's not just about company versus company. It's the community that's behind it.
Yeah.
And I mean, we hear of this all the time where somebody gets kind of beaten over the head going, "We have this generic patent that covers just about everything. You're infringing upon it."
Yeah.
And it's like, come on.
As you're talking about this patent, I'm thinking, like, have you never seen an episode of Star Trek?
Right?
Like, this is all the stuff that we were talking about in the 80s. Like, this is not something you can really patent.
Right.
This is something we've had all along. Yep. Unreal.
I'm really happy that they dropped it because, to be honest, that would have been it wouldn't have been a fair fight in that they would have had to hire a lawyer outside the state. They would have.
That's so stressful anyone. But like, what a waste of resources.
To know you're right, but feel like you're on the defensive. Yeah. And, you know, the whole thing would have been yucky. And I really love that they felt supported in the way it was shown.
Exactly.
And check out Mycroft. I mean, it's a great project. So think about your Amazon Echo or Google Home Mini or whatever device you have, and then create an open source kind of alternative that you can install on a Raspberry Pi and create your own virtual assistant and plugins for it and everything else. Definitely something we need to look at on Category 5.
Mycroft AI, you're awesome.
Way to go.
The Department of Homeland Security said on Tuesday that a U.S.-based natural gas facility had to shut down operations for 2 days after sustaining a ransomware infection that prevented personnel from receiving crucial real-time operational data from control and communication equipment. The advisory didn't identify the site except to say that it was a natural gas compression facility. Such sites typically use turbines, motors, and engines to compress natural gas so that it can be safely moved through pipelines. The attack started with a malicious link in a phishing email that allowed attackers to pivot from the facility's IT network to the facility's OT network, which is the operational technology hub of servers that control and monitor physical processes of the facility. With that, both the IT and OT networks were infected with ransomware. The attack knocked out crucial control and communications gear that on-site employees depend on to monitor the physical processes. The infection didn't spread to programmable logic controllers, which actually control compression equipment, and it didn't cause the facility to lose control of operations. The advisory explicitly said that, quote, at no time did the threat actor obtain the ability to control or manipulate operations, end quote.
Okay.
So even though they weren't able to control operations, it's still really scary.
I have to kind of bite my tongue on that statement because it kind of feels like one of those where they're, oh, well, they weren't actually able to take control. Well, they really were.
Yeah, maybe they just really didn't do it yet.
Maybe they didn't take control and blow something up, sure, but they had control.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, I don't know if I like that statement. And ransomware is, we can be really complacent and say, it's just the encryption of my files. No, they had to get that in somehow. And how did they get that in this case? An email file.
Right.
So that email file contained ransomware, which encrypted our files. Okay. What else did it do? What else could it have done?
Mm-hmm.
Could it have installed a gigabyte motherboard driver that is exploitable?
Right.
That has like a backdoor in it that allows them into our network and into our OT network and then into our actual controllers?
Mm-hmm.
You don't really know. Like, that's really complacent to state. Unless you've got data to back it. Unless you can legitimately say, this was strictly this infection. We've found the infiltration point. We've locked it down. We've blocked every instance. But I've had computers come in for service where they say, oh, I accidentally fell for a phishing scam. And they started controlling my computer.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then we found they thought they were safe. But then we found that there was like back-end software that was running as services in the background. There was no uninstaller for it. It was just a service running on the computer that allowed them to remote in at any time and take control of the computer, which they're only going to do at 2 o'clock in the morning while you're sleeping.
That's right.
Hmm.
So you don't know what's happening. How many people would notice?
No. Now, can you just, as a precaution, I mean, I'm not saying that this is the answer. Just turn your computer off at night. Would that be okay?
In a home environment, sure,
oh, but not in, right? A business, but environment.
When it's controlling the flow of propane,
yeah,
you'd probably want to leave it running.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's just sad that this is still becoming a regular story
every single week. All the
time. Like, come on, how many times do we have to hear this before we go, yeah, hey, the world finally got it? And it always seems to be the big companies or the governments, yeah, that are getting hit by it. It's like, now, granted, those are the ones that make the news.
Mm-hmm.
True.
But still, it's like, you're a bigger target.
And I think, Jeff, and maybe we can, you know, maybe this is a discussion to be had in the comments below, but I think that these big targets, and forgive me, if you're in the IT departments in these companies, forgive me, I don't mean this as a jab, but it's a truth. It's a sad truth that we were educated 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Right.
Okay. And we've been in the industry for that long. And some of us in the IT department, not myself, of course, but some of us are on the verge of retirement. And that's, again, not a jab. I entirely respect what you do. However, malware has evolved.
Yes.
Right.
Significantly. Mm-hmm. What we're encountering now is not Natus. We're not dealing with BSVs. We're not dealing. When was the last time you ever saw a BSV? And if you know what a BSV is, then you're this. I'm speaking to you.
Yeah.
It's not about those anymore.
No.
Now it's the evolution. Back in 2017, when WannaCry dropped, and we started seeing ransomware infiltrating networks, and we started seeing RDP attacks, and Eternal Blue being exploited, and all of these kinds of things. That's when the cybersecurity industry woke up and said, okay, we need to re-educate ourselves. Mm-hmm. And if we haven't since then, and if we're still thinking in that old mindset where viruses is our threat, I'm sorry to say that viruses are not our threat. When was the last time we ever heard of a virus infiltration?
It truly is.
It's been a long time.
Well, they'll still go, I don't want viruses. It's like, that's your biggest concern.
I have antivirus. I'm safe.
Yeah.
When was the last time you heard of a virus infection?
I haven't got a virus infection because I have antivirus. No.
I'm just saying that's anymore. An old school way of thinking. And it's a dangerous way of thinking because that's how these big industries are getting hit because we've got that old school thinking and we're not adequately educating and protecting ourselves. And it comes down, it comes down to the C-suite as well, educating our staff and making sure that there are cybersecurity professionals that are brought in as consultants and DLPs put in place to be able to protect our networks from today's threats, not yesterday's, not 1999's threats.
Now, I know we have to get to the next story, but is part of this a budgetary component?
Surely.
Like they're looking at it going, we can only put in 1% total budget for cybersecurity when really they should be looking at 10%. Like, and not that there's a defined number, but like the way that things grow, it's like you have to grow with the threats. Mm-hmm. And if that means allocating more of your budget to more cybersecurity to protect your investments and your industry, whatever you're doing, you got to adjust the budget accordingly. You can't just stick with that same number and be like, well, we've got our subscriptions. We updated that. And, we've got an old computer we got to replace. So that's our budget. It's like, no, you got to think.
It's exactly the same mindset though, Jeff. It's that word I use, complacent. Mm-hmm. We've become complacent because we're so used to the old way.
Yep.
When things change, we have to change with it. Plain and simple. Otherwise, you're going to be
Reading these stories.
We're all under attack. Sorry. We are all under attack. Are you going to be susceptible to the attack?
Right.
Are you going to fall victim? Or are you going to be a brick wall that they can't penetrate?
Mm-hmm.
We're all under attack. This is 2020. Do you remember the books when we were kids? 2020 is the future. Hello.
Here we are.
Yes, we're there.
All right. We have got to take a quick break. More of this week's top tech stories are coming right up. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back. I'm Sasha Rickman, and here's our next story. Amazon boss Jeff Bezos has pledged $10 billion to help fight climate change. He wants the money to finance work by scientists, activists, and other groups. He said, quote, I want to work alongside others to both to amplify known ways and to explore new ways of fighting the devastating impact of climate change, end quote. Writing on his Instagram account, Mr. Bezos said the fund would begin distributing money this summer. Mr. Bezos has an estimated net worth of more than $130 billion, so the pledge represents almost 8% of his fortune. Some Amazon employees have urged him to do more to fight climate change. There have been walkouts and some staff have spoken publicly. Also, Mr. Bezos is financing the Blue Origin Space Program. The Seattle-based company is a neighbor of Microsoft, which in January unveiled a plan to become carbon negative by 2030. Closing his post, Mr. Bezos says, quote, Earth is the one thing we all have in common. Let's protect it together, end quote.
We're going to get all kinds of comments below. There's all kinds of mixed feedback to Jeff's.
Oh, really?
Well, Jeff has never been known as a philanthropist.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I think because of that, a lot of people will see this as an investment opportunity, as
or PR.
or PR or saving face in light of strikes and things like that. And right. there's truth in that for yes. sure.
But if saving face also flip side saves the world, I'm down with it.
I don't know that $10 billion will save the world. However, it's a lot more than I can
give. Well, I think it's kind of like playing poker where you just like put some money in and you hope somebody else is like, I'll see you $10 billion and I'll raise you. Right? I mean,
Bill Gates
has some money.
Yeah, fair enough. You know, part of me wonders if this truly is a bit of a PR thing because of the strikes that some of the employees have been doing and the negative media attention about it. And the fact that Amazon, at the end of the day, is a true global enterprise that is built on fossil fuels. And the fact that all of their product is shipping. They're shipping through planes. They're shipping through automobiles.
You can say that, but they're based on the current infrastructure.
Yes, okay? I get
and
that.
And they have put effort into drone-based delivery,
sure.
things like that. So
absolutely.
We're seeing...
So perhaps part of their investments might actually be to change transportation, right?
We
potentially.
See, yeah.
Right?
Yes. Yeah.
So, but I mean, something like that, I think, could have more of a positive impact than saying, I'm just going to throw money out there.
However, you're thinking in terms of his business.
Yes.
So you're thinking Amazon can make changes, and maybe they will. We'll see.
Yep.
It's his company. But what he's doing here is instead setting up a venture fund that says this is for environmental science, environmental yes. research, yes. and whatever can come from that. So mm-hmm. this is not Amazon.
Correct.
This is an investment of 8% of his fortune that will go toward that research and things that could potentially make a very large impact on a positive shift in environmental impact.
I also even wonder if part of it is
right about that.
Is a taxation matter. Oh,
but like, you know what? Even
absolutely,
if, okay,
but that's okay.
Here's the thing. Even if it just changes the focus for people going, oh, wait, climate change, is that important? It is.
Asking that question now.
But you know what I'm saying? Like if he's saying, yes, this is important enough to me that I'm going to put this money towards it, then that's that becomes the news. And then more people are focused on the climate change issue. And now there'll be more perhaps. Creative minds thinking about it.
And $10 billion sitting in trust to be spent on it.
Somebody's going to want to get a grant from that fund.
And they might.
Right? And so they're going to start thinking about ways they can apply for that grant. And they're going to come up with great ideas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have to be honest, Jeff. I understand what you're saying. Yeah, it's a tax write-off, and it's going to have a positive impact on that end of things for him. That's fine.
Well,
because
exactly.
If somebody has money and gives it to a cause and gets a benefit back.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And it's a good cause, and it's making a positive impact on humanity,
then
do
that's
it.
Great. I'm not saying bad. I'm just saying I think to focus on the idea of, oh, it's about climate change. I think there's other things to it where it's like there's a whole plethora of positivity that comes with it.
Yeah.
From the positive PR, the tax write-off.
Oh, sure.
The impact.
Let him have it, though.
Exactly.
He deserves it in that he's had all the opposite of that. And it's funny because now that he probably feels like he can't win.
Right. Probably.
I'm getting the same flack that I got when I was hoarding all my funds.
Yeah.
Right.
And now that I've given $10 billion to a venture fund, I'm getting the same flack.
Yeah, people are like, why only 8%, Jack?
Yeah, why only 8% when,
why
when
not
other...
Why
the
all?
World
they
worth
want
more to you?
They want 50% of his of his worth.
I think it's
up to him.
The truth of the
it's
matter
entirely
is...
entirely up to him.
This money is going to grow in that more people are going to start thinking about it. More people,
sure.
right? So it's just the seed. Like he's just planted this. Okay. Well, he didn't plant the seed.
Jeff Bezos saved the world. That's he right. started it all.
But I mean, he's at least listening to the important issues and the fact that the strikes are going on and the fact that people really do want to see people put their money where their mouth is. Yeah, you say the Earth's important, show us.
Yeah.
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 So he's
my final thought is like, let's watch who qualifies for this funding.
Yes.
Let's watch what companies and what institutions benefit from this funding. And then we can see what kind of difference it's making. Mm-hmm. Because I think $10 billion would go a long way in my bank account.
Well, if you have a saving idea.
Yep, I could do one or two things with that.
Yeah, one or two.
All right, moving right along. Ring, Amazon's video doorbell system, has introduced additional steps to the way users log into their accounts and is making two-factor verification mandatory.
Nice.
Users will need to enter a password and unique six-digit code when they first log in to view their security footage or access the Neighbors app. Two-factor authentication was an option for Ring users before, but it was not the default setting. On Tuesday, Ring also said it would pause its data sharing with third-party firms. The change comes as Ring and Amazon face increasing scrutiny about privacy protection and data sharing. In a blog post, Ring's president, Leila Rohi, said the company takes, quote, digital security and privacy seriously, end quote, and would look at additional ways to improve security. Ring's new login system will be similar to other two-factor authentication processes. After signing in with a username and password, the app will ask to send a text message or email with a one-time six-digit code. Once the code is entered, the user will have access to the app and be able to view footage from outdoor and indoor cameras. Owners will then be able to use their mobile apps for 30 days before they're required to go through the two-step process again, unless they log out of their account in the meantime. Last week, Nest, Google's home security device, began requiring two-factor authentication as well.
Good move.
I like this. I like that they're making it a compulsory thing. Not a fan of the 30-day window, though.
Why?
How come?
I think it should be shorter, to be honest.
But if you log out,
but
because I'm thinking, like, because this is my computer,
yeah,
right? So it's only going to remember it on my computer.
Right.
If I switch to a different computer or somebody tries to compromise my account, they're going to need the 2FA in order to sign in.
Mm-hmm. Right. But still, I feel like 30 days is a long time.
But you can log out.
But say you don't log out. Like, how much can be accessed in those 30 days on potentially a shared device? I mean, I would hope that you're not using it on a shared device, but I think for a lot of people,
you know,
on a home computer or maybe like a laptop or something, I'm assuming this is also going to be the same case with phones. If you're viewing on your phone, like,
right. I think that likely 30 days is the mandatory. You can probably set it to be more frequent.
I would hope so.
I mean, I have a lot of two-factor authentication devices and most of them I just set to every time.
I think also though, you're putting a local spin on the security.
Right.
You're thinking along the terms of somebody breaking into your house and having access to your security cameras. But if they have that, then they're already in.
Yeah. No, fair enough. I get that. But I don't know. I just, to me, 30 days seems long. I could, 2 weeks, I'd be okay with 2 weeks. 2 weeks makes sense. But 30 days to me seems long.
What do you think? Should it be 45 days?
Oh, don't go there.
I think that the idea here is not so much the spin that you're giving it, but instead it's to prevent illicit access from outside. Yes. I don't want somebody from Latvia being able to access my security camera.
No, of course not.
I don't want...
Nothing against Latvia, by the way.
Nothing against Latvia.
They're very peaceful people.
I don't want somebody... And you can have access to my cameras, okay? I'll give you my 2FA code right now. It's six digits. But my point is that I think that's what I'm trying to lock out. I'm trying to lock down people that are trying to hack into my security cameras. I want that two-factor authentication to block that attempt because even if they get in, they can't get further than the 2FA because they don't have my device to get that code.
Right.
Right.
But it's not just text. It was also email. So if they've gotten into your...
But once it's a one-time use password. So once I've logged in on my computer with that 2FA code, they can't use that same code again to access it on their computer.
But if they have access to your... I mean, like, this is why I'm saying 30 days is not great. I would rather see
it. You know what is great, though? That it's happening at all.
Yes, exactly.
And that it's compulsory. I like that it's compulsory by default, which is, that's the advantage here.
Because
we don't all think about, especially novice users who go to a super center and buy one of these smart cameras and don't know that, hey, I really need to enable 2FA.
Mm-hmm. You know what? Some people are turned off by 2FA, which blows my mind. When
it
I
sounds
have,
technical, Sasha.
Right. When I have people over to my house and I'm, you know, showing them my VR and I have my Steam account, it's 2FA, and they're like, why do you have it so that it texts your phone?
And just next time you go to a friend, just like, be like, hey, what's the 2FA for your Wi-Fi?
I know. And then I have to like explain it to them, but they're like, yeah. Oh, well, like my banking is 2-factor authentication. Like all, like I like it. To me, it feels good.
Well done.
Yeah. I think 2FA should be the default for all security.
For everything.
Yeah.
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 It just makes sense.
And let's be clear. And Jeff, it is not perfect security.
No, it's not perfect.
It's not perfect. It's not flawless. It's not uncompromisable. It's just a very good added layer of protection to prevent the average to fairly exceptional hacker from being able to access your stuff.
Yep.
That's all. So it's a really good, easy way to do that. And you know, it's until they come up with something better, it's the best thing going. So comment below. What do you think? And how many days should 2FA on your Ring doorbell be set for by default?
For Jeff. Let Jeff know.
Yeah, let Jeff know.
Big thanks to Roy W. Nash and our community of viewers for submitting stories to us this week. Thanks for watching the Category5.tv newsroom. Don't forget to like and subscribe for all your tech news with a slight Linux bias. And if you appreciate what we do, become a patron at patreon.com/newsroom. From the Category5.tv newsroom, I'm Sasha Rickman.
And I'm Robbie Ferguson.
And I'm Jeff Weston.